Live from Data Doctors HQ.
This is the Data Doctors radio program, delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
And welcome to the Data Doctors radio program. It's Brandon Spanky and special data recovery specialist, actually, Clayton, here to join us this week.
Glad to be here.
Here's what's going on in this week in tech.
Forget the NFL. Sony gamers are experiencing their own lockout.
Also, desperately seeking a girlfriend? The answer could be as close as your laptop, only virtually.
And Mother's Day is right around the corner. We've got a one-click get she'll love.
Data Doctors radio program.
Before we jump into that, we've got to talk about something.
Painful story for gamers this week.
Yeah, it's huge in the news.
And rough.
If you own a PlayStation, and a lot of you do, 77, 78 million of you, on the PlayStation Network.
Let's clarify that. If you're a child owns a PlayStation.
No. I know way more adults that have them. If I've got kids, the box for them is the Wii or maybe the Xbox. The PlayStation, that's a more adult-oriented box. And I'm sure there's kids that play on this thing too. But if you haven't heard, Sony experienced what now has turned into a big, major issue. The network was hacked. And the hackers, the hacker group, they say the individual, but then there's other reports that say this group, they've obtained access to all member records, including name,
address,
email,
phone number.
Yeah, it goes on and on. And at this point, Sony says they can't rule out that credit card information might be a part of that. Not only that, usernames and passwords for the network. I mean, everything. It's so bad that they've brought in a security consultant company. They shut down the network, right? You can't, the pieces of it may be starting to come back online. And I mean, it's big. This is affecting millions of people. If credit card information was part of what got out, this would qualify as one of the largest security breaches involving credit card information ever of all time.
And the really, really sad part. Okay, now if you think about this, this is not just a couple of hundred thousand people. This is millions and millions and millions of people.
Tens of millions.
Tens of millions of people. And you know what? Who I feel really bad for right now is Prince William.
Prince William.
Prince William is a gamer, just got married on Friday.
Yeah.
And now he's got to worry about changing his credit card number while he's on his honeymoon.
Why?
Well, because he's a gamer. He's a Sony PlayStation gamer.
But maybe there's somebody that could do that for him, you think? The royal handler, perhaps? The royal game handler?
Butler or something.
Somebody
I'm
who
sure
can do
some title
but,
for that.
But this is such a huge breach. And the pain that, as a consumer, we're experiencing is we have to now, this isn't just a matter of going into the network and changing your credit card. You can't access it. You need to shut down that credit card.
Well, even if you could, the credit card information may have been breached. And so get with your credit card company if you're on their network, if you used a debit card, credit card, whatever payment method, if you have that on file with Sony. At this point, it may or may not have been compromised, but to play it safe, you got to get with your credit card company, have them issue a new card. I know it's a pain. I know it may not be fun, but it's... If you don't, you may end up in a lot of trouble.
And even if you don't do that, at least, you know, utilize one of those credit monitoring programs or software or companies that do that, that, you know, track any unusual purchases that might be made on those cards.
It's funny you mentioned that. There's already been a filing, a legal suit, and they're seeking class action. And part of what they're looking for is monetary damages and a couple of years' worth of free credit monitoring, all because of this. And so
from Sony, they want Sony to pay for this.
Yeah, this story is a moving story. This is going forward.
But here's the bigger question, though. Yes, should Sony keep their data secure? Absolutely. What about the guys who did this?
Well, that's an interesting thing that really, you know, we spent some time, we were talking about this before the show, and we spent some time trying to look for stories about this, and we found a cool timeline. By the way, we've got links to all this, datadoctors.com/radio. But this timeline shows sort of when the breach occurred, when Sony figured it out, when they started notifying people. By the way, they were kind of late to the game in notifying folks. Probably a bad on them. Anyway, we're looking at all this, and we found all these sites, all this information. Everything's talking about the breach in technical terms, or about how Sony mishandled things, or how they didn't have good security, or how they're getting analysts, or no mention anywhere about anyone trying to track down who's responsible, and if they could track them down, what kind of punishment, how to catch them. What happens if they're outside of the U.S.? Well, they're off limits. And so it gets you to start thinking about a couple of things. One, why isn't there some kind of international consortium, some way to be able to go after these guys? Because if not, they're going to keep doing this stuff, number one. Number two, it is kind of odd that if you take this and kind of compare it to a bank robbery, we're not mad at the bank robber. We're not even trying to catch the bank robber. We're mad at the bank.
The focus has been on Sony, not the hackers or hacker.
Right. And to me, that's kind of, you know, yes, is there some degree of liability on Sony's part?
Of course. No question.
But the bigger question is, why aren't we going after the bank robber? Why aren't we going after the guy or group that did this? Instead of pointing fingers and saying, Sony, you suck. You're at fault for this. My data wasn't safe with you. Forget about that.
Unless it's an inside job.
An inside job. So I know that there's all kinds of international law. I know this is not an easy task. I know this is something that they can't do tomorrow. But this is not the first time this kind of thing has happened. It won't be the last time. And as long as there's no way to deal with this kind of problem, there's no way to go after these guys, there's no way to get these guys to have any kind of fear, then this is the world we're going to live in. And I don't know if it takes separating the internet and something as extreme as saying, well, here's a secure internet, and any country that doesn't want to participate in tracking, extraditing, whatever's going to be required from a legal standpoint, any country that doesn't want to participate in that, then you're not on our new internet. I mean, that sounds crazy, right? But the alternative is we do what we're doing now. And that's nuts.
And we're chasing our tails. And, you know, Sony,
we're not even trying to chase.
We're not even trying to chase. We're just pointing. And that's what Americans are really good at, pointing fingers and filing lawsuits. And rather than blaming Sony and having Sony be the only party involved in this that's liable, it's not just Sony's fault. It's all the people that did this. It's the people that are the hackers.
But couldn't we agree that Sony might have been capable of giving this information out to the consumers
sooner? There's things that they've done wrong, and that's being examined, and certainly notifying people, being transparent, getting information out quickly, that's part of it, having good security in place in the first place. There's lots of things. Look, we've got more to talk about with this story. It's not over.
In my estimation, Sony pulled an Apple. Apple's really bad at admitting when they mess up. Speaking of messing up, what happens when your social network shuts down? Where do all your pictures go? Think it won't happen to you? Think again. It's the Data Doctors radio program.
Hey, you work downtown, right? You grab lunch while on the go. And by the time you get home, it's too late to bring your computer in for repair. Look, computers never break when it's convenient. But how convenient would it be if you could drop it off right near your office? Data Doctors Downtown is here. If you worked in downtown Phoenix, you can drop off your PC or laptop right where you work on the northwest corner of First and Adams, across from the Wells Fargo building. Now, you don't have to rush home to drop it off or give up your weekend to deal with the problem. Data Doctors Downtown. Drop it off before you get your 9-to-5 on or when you head out for lunch. To find out how close the store is to your office, enter your zip code at datadoctors.com/locations. Data Doctors Downtown. Computer repair that's so convenient, your boss won't even know you are gone.
Delivering technology for your technology.
The Data Doctors radio program.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing but can't write it down, just hit datadoctors.com/radio. All the links are there, ready for you to click and go.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
The OS. Not the operating
OS.
System.
Oh, okay.
The original social network, Friendster. Remember Friendster?
Friendster? Yeah, they were like before there was Facebook.
Which, who can imagine before Facebook?
Were they before, what was that was other social MySpace? Network that went out? Before, were they,
well,
weren't
no,
they before MySpace?
MySpace is still around, but.
But it's not the same thing.
Huh? I got overload. I heard. How did you know that?
Well, I mean, before Facebook, there was MySpace.
Friendster. I just said they're the OS, man. The original social. Yo.
Gangsta.
So I guess that would mean that they did come before MySpace.
So guess what Friendster's doing?
What are they doing?
So Friendster was early in. They started a following. If you were in on the social scene before social was social and social was hip and social was cool, you were on Friendster. And they've seen, obviously, their numbers decline because of this little thing called Facebook and some other stuff, but mostly Facebook. And you would think that they'd be trying to figure out how to reinvent themselves. Well, they sort of are.
But in a bad way.
Well, I think they've taken the Avis approach. We can't be number one, so let's just be a great number two. Because number two is
not
okay.
Even number two.
We try harder. Well, but why not be number 50 then?
Yeah, but what they're doing is antisocial.
So check this out. They're losing customers, not customers. They're losing eyeballs. They're losing visitors. They're losing what obviously lets them sell advertising. And so here's the move. Let's delete all the pictures and all the blog posts.
Because
that's going to get us way more traffic.
Isn't that what you post on a social
network? So what else do you do on a social network other than post your thoughts, aka blog, right?
Yep, blog.
And share photos. What else do you do on it?
What else is left?
People game. They play those silly Farmvilles. That's about it.
So I don't get what is it that they're trying to do here? Because, and if you go to their site and you look at, they have like these little press releases that just basically say, blah, 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 and we're deleting blogs and photos, blah, 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 blah.
Can
and
you
that's
just
good
see,
because blah, blah, blah.
Can you just see them sitting around in the corporate boardroom of Friendster?
I got it. I know what to do.
Dude. Because this is a boardroom in the social media sphere.
Right.
Dude, you know what we should do? We should reinvent ourselves. Screw the pictures. Just take them down. And don't let people share and communicate.
No, don't. It's not just don't let them put new ones there. Get rid of all the old ones.
Just delete them.
So if you're one of three people on Friendster, right, and you've got stuff there you care about, get while the getting's good.
I was going to say, if you're one of those dedicated users and you've been posting those photos for years,
all three
and
of
now
you.
They're all gone?
Well, at one point they had tens of millions of people, they said.
They said.
They said.
At one point we had tens of people listening to this program.
But we've all been defriended.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Just back up your pictures. If you have a good, safe backup plan, you're not going to worry about it. But Friendster, they're going under, and they're going under fast. You know, as the summer is approaching, I'm a dad. I like to take a road trip with the family.
We're all dads, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we all are.
Yeah.
Okay, well, happy Father's Day months
Dad.
Early.
Yeah.
You know, as you go on these road trips, a lot of times it's really hard to keep the kids entertained. And that is one of the reasons that we look for these featured mobile apps that we like to talk about on the program. This week I found an app. Do you guys remember the old board game Taboo?
Yeah.
No.
You don't remember Taboo?
No.
Okay, so Taboo is kind of like almost like a Pictionary where you would have a bunch of words as a clue to what the word is that you're trying to guess.
The password is?
Exactly. So, for example, if the word is Egypt, the hints are Arabs, pyramids, mummies, camels, sand. And then you have to guess Egypt.
Man, you're racist.
It's the game.
Oh, okay.
It's called iTaboo. It's available for the iPad, for the iPod.
So I'm pretty sure.
So basically, you're giving my mom a reason to buy an iPhone or iPod Touch for that game. Because
we all hand the phone to our kids when we're on a trip or when we're at a restaurant and they're antsy.
Absolutely. Right. They're bored and you want to do something.
Which is why my son's beat every level on Angry Birds and, you know,
gentlemen,
I've been able to play the game.
We've got to teach them not to say the word they're trying to describe because that's the first thing they're going to do, right? Is, oh, wait a minute. Oh, we screwed that one up. We're going to try this.
And so what it does is it times you and then if you don't make it in time, you hand the device over to the next team. So you play in teams so you can have multiple kids playing. It's not just a one-off game. So you can have, if you have, like I do, I have five kids.
You had a family of five. Wow, you grew since last week.
We did. I have five kids. And so the littlest one can't play, but you can pair them up in teams. And so there's team A, team B. You can do up to multiple teams. And then, so for example, let me pass this one because no one's going to care about that one. Subscription.
The password is subscription.
Columns.
Newspaper.
Articles.
Newspaper.
Journalist.
Newspaper.
Newspaper.
Advertisement.
Newspaper.
Magazine.
Newspaper.
No, magazine. Anyway.
Okay,
so,
pass the phone.
So
it's a good thing we told us what it was because I'm not doing so well.
It's iTaboo. Bring your vocabulary. It's a fun game. It's good for the kids. Gets their brain going. It's a blast to play with. And you know what? Keeps them entertained for hours. That's all I got.
That's all you got.
That's all I got.
If you need the link, if you want to know more about any of the things we talk about, datadoctors.com/radio.
And just remember, any link that I give you is a cool link.
Now, we need a short moment of silence. Actually, I wish we had the Taps sound file, because there's been a death. The typewriter. Remember the typewriter? We remember the old vinyl and turntables. The typewriter.
I had a typing class in school.
Yeah, well, apparently the final typewriter has rolled off the production lines in Mumbai, India, where they're the last company. Supposedly the last company. Their demand is off. Nobody's ordering typewriters anymore, so they're no longer going to produce
them.
What
do you mean?
So antique shopping is the only way you're going to get a hold of one of these things.
I don't know why people wouldn't be ordering typewriters. They are the hottest tech item around. The delete key requires whiteout.
Well, no. They remember the autocorrect? You could push. They had that special little thing
those
in there.
Those were on the IBM Selectrics.
They had spell check, right?
Yeah, spell check is called the dictionary.
At their peak, typewriters, in a quarter, they sold 12 million. That's one company. Smith Corona was the sort of king back in the 50s.
Wow.
So the typewriter apparently dead. Oh, the story just got an update.
This just in.
Manufacturers in China, Japan, Indonesia are still making typewriters.
Wow.
We dodged that bullet.
The world is safe. You can still type away. Hey, still ahead. Clayton, are you desperate for a date?
Absolutely.
Who isn't?
Guys, you're going to love this one. Hang tight.
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Got a question for the program? Because it's easy to talk to us anytime. All you have to do is hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/datadoctors. Post the question on the wall and we'll try to answer it.
Data Doctors radio program.
Warfront from the storefront. Actual stories from Data Doctors locations around the country.
So this story comes to us from store 283, way out in Freehold, New Jersey.
It's from New Jersey.
This is like central south New Jersey.
It's not really New Jersey.
No, it's the green part.
Jurastastic.
Not the concrete part. So
not the polluted part.
Yeah, kind of a common thing. And this what happens here happens more often than you'd think. A lady comes in with a computer, and she's got what she thinks is a fairly simple problem, but she's done a bunch of research and can't figure out what it is, and so she just wants our guys to take a quick look at it, and she's pretty sure it's, relatively painless, straightforward, simple, 5-minute fix kind of thing. Turns out her Internet Explorer, right, her browser, when she tries to open it, it just immediately closes back down. And if she tries, she got on another computer and got online, and it says, well, go check this and try to run this little diagnostic, and funny enough, when she tries to run the diagnostic tool, it just closes up immediately, and it's doing all these really weird things, but, it doesn't, everything else appears to be sort of normal. She can go in and open Word and do all the stuff she's used to doing.
Sounds like a simple problem.
But she kind of can't get on the internet, and she can't troubleshoot that, and she doesn't have an alternative browser, and, so the guys take a look at it, and they go through a diagnostic. It turns out she's really badly infected, got all kinds of viruses, spyware, things that are tracking and sending back, information. Pretty common thing. And so what's happened here is her machine got infected. And in the old days, when your machine got infected, these infections were more about sort of in your face. Ha ha, look at, I got you. And it would be real obvious you were infected with something. And the whole goal of these things was for hacker guys to gain notoriety with their hacker friends and become cool. And so the best way to do that is to make as much noise as possible. And noise doesn't necessarily mean sound. It means a lot of people notice. Therefore, it becomes a news story, and people hear it, and you go, hey, I did that, man.
AKA right? Taking down the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, there might be a whole lot of other reasons if they got credit card
level.
Information there, right? Today, most viruses, malware, the bad stuff. It's all about trying to get something, and to it's a business. It's making money. And so the what's going on today is these viruses get into your machine. This malware gets into your machine. And it's not about in your face. It's about quiet, silent, doing its job.
Covert ninja operations.
And it generally only has a couple of jobs. Job one, be quiet. Job two, try to spread the infection to others within the same household, within the same network, within the friends, the address books, whatever. Job three, collect information, whether that be social security numbers, usernames, passwords, credit card information, whatever it is. So basically monitor and report
and
back.
Send it back, yeah.
And generally the idea there is now about making money. And so there's a number of ways your computer is used when it's compromised. It could be direct use, meaning it's trying to collect information, usernames, passwords, bank accounts, that kind of stuff, so that somebody can then do financial transactions as if they were you. But there's another use out there, and it's kind of a big one. It's called a botnet, and it's where your machine is taken over, and hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands of machines are then rented and sold by the hour, by the week, by the day, to crime organizations that want to do things like take down Sony networks,
so
things like
basically
that.
Basically using the processing power of the computer multiple systems
to do that? You can do powerful things if you control an army. And in the technology world, if you control an army of computers, you can do powerful things.
So it's like the Borg in Star Trek.
Yeah, your machine may be infected standing by waiting for commands, and it's usually group one that's organized that gets groups and groups of computers together, and then they rent them out, like timeshares, to crime networks. A lot of this stuff is where organized crime has gone. There's lots of money to be made here, and so this is not about in-your-face, ha-ha, I got you, and hackers trying to impress their friends. This is about making money.
So this could be lying in wait.
Right. So the lesson here is just because something seems just a little bit annoying, if something's off, get somebody to take a look at it. Get somebody that knows more than you, that can help you, figure out what's going on and figure out if it's something real you need to worry about or if it's not. Obviously, we talk about all the time, keep your antivirus up to date, you know, keep your patches and get your Windows updates or your Apple software updates, whatever platform you're on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, be a little vigilant. When you see something that looks a little bit off, don't just ignore it.
And speaking of something that looks a little bit off.
Are you looking at me?
Why are you looking at Clayton?
Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shakespeare wore funny clothes. He was a little bit off.
Well, he was probably back in his day, he was hip.
I'm sure. Back then, yeah, he had gauges. That was the equivalent of gauges in his ears.
Gauges?
Gauges. You know, those big loopy, hoopy things.
Oh, I've got gauges on the dash of my car, but
totally different.
Different, yeah.
So what does Shakespeare and social media have in common?
Zero.
Fighting cyberbullying.
Fighting cyberbullying?
Really? Yeah. But they're doing it in a cool way. And so there's a company that is teaming up with Facebook, and they're using Shakespeare in a new way.
Yo, let's set the scene. A villa in the hills of Italy, really, where everything's calm and chill. In the middle's Leonardo, he owns it all. His daughter and niece are the...
They've wrapped Shakespeare.
And they went a little crazy with the stereo effects.
Yeah, there's some goofiness. But they wrapped Shakespeare.
Yes, that's a girl's name. Total PYT, a pretty young...
And it's pretty cool. What they're doing is they're using Shakespeare to help get a message across. But here's the fun thing. If they thought about it, they could really use this to better education. I would have dug Shakespeare if it was wrapped over to be or not to be, that is the question, in a book.
For real.
It's just a great way. Maybe they should look at using it for other ways of educating.
Hey, just ahead, taking pictures is easy, but making a photo album, not so much. Until now, stay tuned.
You just found out you need open heart surgery. Look, as scary as that can be, you don't have to worry about a huge hospital bill because you have health insurance. You pay your copay, get taken care of, and life is good again. Did you know that you could have that same peace of mind with your technology too? Sign up for Data Doctors Quality Care and you're covered. Just like healthcare coverage for your family, Quality Care starts at just $8.95 a month. When your computer needs a checkup, bring it in, and you're a copay away from feeling better again. It's just like going to your doctor, without the needles. Your problem goes away in a single visit, all for the price of a copay. To become a Data Doctors Quality Care patient, just go to the Data Doctors location nearest you or datadoctors.com and click Quality Care. Data Doctors Quality Care. Health insurance for the health of your PC.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
Remember, everything we're talking about is easily found anytime online, datadoctors.com/radio.
Tech knowledge for your technology.
Data Doctors Radio Program.
So Facebook, always changing things, always trying to be ubiquitous, decided to change the like button, or really add on to the like button. You know, the like button you see all over the web now that's on everybody's page everywhere.
And I like what they did.
You're telling me that they have a dislike button now?
No, no dislike.
What about unlike?
Why hate? No unlike. They're not haters. They're lovers.
Unlike Friendster.
So the problem with like, and I don't know if it's really a problem, but in order to take like to the next level, like, when you clicked it, would let you like so that you're following the stream of whatever it is you're liking, but it would then also display that to all of your friends, which you may or may not want to necessarily do that. You might want to only select a group of friends or one or 10 or whatever, right?
Right. So let's say in my case, I like
Sarah
a
Palin.
Business website. No, I was going to say McDonald's. I like them.
Da, 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 da.
I don't like their food, but I like the way they use social media. So I pay attention to them.
Okay.
But I don't want people to think that I'm like a McDonald's foodie.
You're a closet liker of
right.
McDonald's stuff.
So what I want to do is I want to follow them without having the world see that I like them. And now there's a new way to do that.
So the like button, you're going to start to see either replaced with a send button, which at first doesn't make sense, but it will. Hang on. Or it might not just be replaced. It might be side by side. In fact, if you go to our website, datadoctors.com/radio, in fact, any place on our website, you're going to see the like button that's been in that kind of left-hand side there. Next to it is a send button. And what the send does is when you click on, if you click on like, it's a one click, you're done. If you click on send, it should drop down a little box and allow you to type in names, groups, whatever it is, along with a little customized personal message, and then send that to just those people on Facebook.
Wait a second, Brandon. Yesterday when we were talking about this.
I know.
Before the
I know
program,
where you're going. I know.
You said to me, I hate this. This is the worst. This is dumb. This is a waste. What? And
so let me tell you why. It sounded dumb when we were talking about it without it being in context. And so after we were talking about it, I was thinking to myself, you know, we're going to talk about this on the show tomorrow. I got to go see what this thing is because this doesn't sound like it makes any sense. But, you know, those guys over at Facebook, there's a couple of smart guys at least over there. And so I went and did a little bit of hunting and found a couple of sites that had already implemented it because this is a brand new feature. Not many people have done it yet. And I clicked on the little send, which the word send doesn't make sense until you've done it once. And when you click on it, all of a sudden, it's like the clouds parted. And remember Monty Python? Yeah, that happens. And I went, I get it. Okay. So if you're listening and you're thinking this doesn't make any sense, do me a favor. Go try it. You can try it on our site. We've made it easy for you. It's the same place you're going to go get the links anyway, datadoctors.com/radio. Right next to where it says like, you're going to see send. Click that send, and then you're going to see a magic box appear, and you can start typing. And no, we don't see all of the friends that you see. Those are your friends. You see that. But that's how it works. Very simple, very cool.
Speaking of send, while we're talking, I just got an email from Sony.
Are you sure it's from Sony?
Well, it says it's Sony. It's the PlayStation Network. They're talking about the network hack. It's got to be from Sony. And they want me to re-enter my password.
Whoa. Back away from the cliff. Whoa.
Hold on. Oh,
step back, sir.
Wait a second. How do I know it's real?
So here's one of the things that potentially, let's say for a minute, that we talked about this earlier in the show, that the Sony, the PlayStation Network that's been hacked, let's say for a minute that they got no credit card information. Well, we know for a fact that they got usernames, passwords. We know that they got your name, your first name, last name, telephone number. They got all kinds of stuff about you. It wouldn't be a far-fetched thing to think that maybe this group is going to send out emails to all the people that they now have email addresses from that look very Sony-esque, that say all kinds of things that only Sony would know. Well, and these guys too, of course. And they're not going to ask you for your username and password. They already have that. They're not going to ask you for your address or your phone number. They already have that. But maybe they're going to say, hey, we've got this big problem, and while the Sony network is temporarily down, we're asking you to change your password. And while you're at it, update your card information with new cards, because we've told you to kill your old cards, right? And suddenly you're going to go, okay. Oh, and by the way, the URL you're going to go to because the Sony network's temporarily down, it isn't a Sony URL, but that's okay. It's all good. And so you go to this other URL and
everything,
you start doing things. Right? Wow. Start to think about this for a minute.
Even if you had just a few 10,000, 20,000 people out of the 77 million people that potentially were affected by this,
click on that
email.
So this hasn't happened.
But potentially.
Right? But we're talking about an example of what could happen and something you need to be aware of.
So it's spear phishing.
If you're getting emails and they're just informational, no problem. If they ask you to take some action, I would not click links. I would go type the URLs you're used to typing in the browser you're used to using and go that route. And keep in mind that it's possible people could get phone calls. I mean, there's all kinds of things because they got all this information. And so you just got to be vigilant. You got to be careful.
Yeah. It's 70 million people are going to feel some pain at some point because of this hack. And it's unfortunate. And we're going to talk about it more in the program as well. Every family loves taking pictures.
Well, and just in time for Mother's Day, you can create a photo album using your Instagram images.
Well, see, here's the problem, though. I like taking pictures. We actually, thanks to your advice, went and bought a pretty nice digital camera that, an SLR camera and cool lenses.
That single lens reflex.
Right. And my kids, my son is into a sport, diving, that requires us to have a lens that gives us a lot of zoom because we have to be far away. You can't get close to that diving board, right? So we have all this. We take all these pictures, and this thing can fire off, 10 shots a second and all kinds of craziness. And you get all these pictures, and you comb through them, and you find the best ones. Oh, my gosh. I'm so done. I don't want to make an album. Yeah. Right. So much work.
Making albums is really hard. In fact, the president of Instagram said that it sucks to make an album if you're a consumer.
Actually, what he exactly said is people don't like to build photo albums because photo albums are a pain in the ass to make. That's his exact quote.
And as a professional photographer, I will tell you that it is absolutely true. Unless you have specific software designed to help you build the album, creating one is a pain. The new Instagram album maker with Keepsy, I think, is the company that partnered with them, allows you to take all of those pictures. It will build it for you. It's click, built, buy, send.
That's it.
That's how easy it is.
Wow.
Killer.
Done and done. If you want the link to that or any of the things we talk about anytime, datadoctors.com/radio. Of course, there's also a cool search tool you can use there that'll help you find answers to just about anything you can think of. If you've thought it, somebody else probably has too, and we've got the answer for you.
This is the Data Doctors radio program. Live from Data Doctors HQ.
This is the Data Doctors radio program, delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
Welcome to the Data Doctors radio program. It's Spanky, Brandon, and data recovery specialist Clayton making a guest appearance this week. Here's what's going on in the world of tech.
Well, you already know the iPhone tracks you, but can you hide from Apple?
Also, snooping. It's not a crime. It's a feature.
Plus, this week's MacTastic tip, can you spell dictionary?
This is the Data Doctors radio program.
So we've been talking a little bit about the PlayStation Network and the hack, and we're not going to beat that piece of that dead horse, but there's another little piece of this, and I get that they're supposed to do everything they can to prevent the hack in the first place, but here's where they and a lot of companies with these kinds of problems are falling down. The problem occurs. They figure out the problem occurs. And then days go by before they start notifying their customers. And the first notification is like, there may be some small compromise. Don't worry. And then the next notification is, well, the compromise might be a little bit bigger. And it might include stuff like your name and address. And then, and each day there's a little bit more. And finally, a week later, they say, oh, and by the way, we can't rule out the possibility that they got credit card information too. So you ought to be kind of getting with your credit card company. I get it, Sony. You're embarrassed this happened. You want to minimize and spin the story and do all the political stuff to make sure that you're impacting the company the least. But you're a service provider. You need to provide service and to your customers, the people that pay you. And the best way you can do that is when something occurs, fess up. We got a big problem, guys. And it's going to take us a few days to sort this out. And we're not sure, but we think that they got access to all kinds of stuff, including potentially your credit cards. And do that on day one, not on day 12, on day 7.
The biggest problem with companies is, I call it the three S's of a mistake: screw up, scramble, silence. Because that's what they do. The screw up occurs, they scramble, they try to spin it, but they go silent. And silence is deadly. And you have Facebook, you have social means, you can get it out there and start talking about it. The faster you talk about it, the faster you can react to it.
It took them a really long time to get the message out, the real sort of now message, which is, you know, your card information may have been compromised. And we've got an interesting timeline if you're interested, datadoctors.com/radio. It's one of the links we have there that shows when the attack occurred, when they recognized it, all the major kind of timelines up to today. So you can check that stuff out. I won't beat the dead horse anymore. I know it's. I know that story's there, but it just kind of bothers me.
But I want to beat a different dead horse. You've heard in the news, and anyone who has an iPhone or an iPad has heard the story about iPhones tracking you. Well, we've all got iPhones here at Data Doctors, and we said, you know, what does this stuff really hold? What does this device have that's so critical, that everyone's so upset about? And so what we did is we handed one of these over to our data recovery specialist, Clayton, who did a little forensic investigation to find out what's on an iPhone. And I'm going to tell you right now, my jaw is still back in the data recovery lab.
It's on the floor in pieces.
It is unbelievable. Clayton, when you first dug into this, what were you expecting to find?
Not nearly as much information as I did find. And ultimately, what you know, the process that we go through to extract this data, you know, first we have to make a complete image of the entire phone, which, you know, can take quite a bit of time to do. But it's the data carving and weeding out all of that information, that tracking information, which not only contains the dates and times of different cellular networks you've connected to, different Wi-Fi networks that you've just driven by, but, you know, the exact latitude and longitude.
Did you say data carving?
What is that?
That sounds like carving a pumpkin. Like, look at all the guts out of there. Yeah.
Basically, it allows us to pull out, you know, the specific information that we're looking for. And in this case, we found, or I should say I found, over 100,000 instances where my iPhone had been logging where I was.
And what was interesting, and this is something you shared with me, this went back to not when you got your iPhone 4, not when iOS 4 came out, when supposedly all this was turned on. This went back to two devices ago that you've had, that you've taken that profile and moved it, right? It went back years and years. Every cell phone tower, every Wi-Fi, not just Wi-Fi you connected to, Wi-Fi you were in proximity of that the phone was aware of.
You touched a Wi-Fi and you ignored it, and it logged you. So
correct.
It's really tracking. The thing that really blew my mind is that it could pinpoint you to not just a mile away, a half a block away. It could pinpoint your location to where you were at the exact time you were there.
Extremely accurate. And you know, Apple's come out and said that this is a supposed bug, and that, you know, they're going to be changing this and only saving that information for 7 days as opposed to, say, a year. You know, that doesn't really take up a whole lot of space on the iPhone, so that tracking information could be kept on there for much longer than that.
Which brings me to another question, Brandon. I'm sorry.
No problem.
A lot of us have sold our older iPhones as we've migrated up to newer iPhones. You know, I've wiped them out. I've erased it. How do you know that that data's gone?
Well, here's the question. How did you erase it? There's a couple different ways. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hit my mail program.
Reset.
I deleted my mail.
Yeah.
I deleted the apps that I don't want there. And then I reset the factory setting.
I left the apps on mine because the guy was willing to pay more for a couple of those apps.
Well, I'll tell you there, that is probably the worst possible way you could have sold that iPhone.
You know what we need to do? We need to do kind of a follow-up on this. Maybe in a future show in a week or two. We need to take one of our phones, and we'll find somebody. We'll take the new guy. We'll guinea pig his phone.
Okay.
Right? We'll get one that has plenty of information that's been used, whatever. And we'll wipe it out the way a consumer would wipe it out. We'll try two or three different methods, the most popular, the ones we can find. And then we'll give the phone to Clayton, and let's see what he can get back. And let's see what method is the right method, because you're right. People have these devices. At some point, you're going to upgrade, you're going to change, whatever. How do you make sure that that kind of information is gone?
Yeah, that's killer. Clayton, we're going to talk to you more about this, but first, we have to hit this part of the show. It's Geek Speak of the Week.
The Geek Speak this week, something called CAPTCHA.
You mean like a screen capture?
CAPTCHA. No, I don't have a lisp.
And if you happen to know what CAPTCHA is?
You probably don't know what it is. It's something you've used and seen plenty, and you have no idea what it is. Now you know the name for it. It's that thing at the bottom of a form that verifies that you're human by taking a picture and having you type a bunch of letters and... It's annoying.
Like snartflam flagglesiger.
That really annoying thing.
That's called a CAPTCHA. It's there to prevent spam and garbage and, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
when we come back, we've already ragged on Apple. We're going to tell you a cool Mac app that'll blow you away. This is only for Apple users. Because I'm Mac fanboy. It's the Data Doctors radio program.
There are so many things we like to get done at lunch hour. It's the time of day you race around and get a million things done so you don't have to do them later. After all, time isn't unlimited. So when your PC or laptop has an issue, you've got issues. Who can fix it? When can I find time to get it there? And how far away is the place? The answer is as close as your office, at Data Doctors downtown. If you work in downtown Phoenix, you can drop off your PC or laptop right where you work, on the northwest corner of First and Adams, across from the Wells Fargo building. Data Doctors downtown. Drop your PC or laptop off before you hit the cubicle or when you head out to lunch. To find out how close the store is to your office, enter your zip code at datadoctors.com/locations. Data Doctors downtown. Computer repair that's so convenient, your boss won't even know you were gone.
Delivering tech knowledge for your technology.
The Data Doctors radio program.
No need to be lonely, boys. If you're desperate for a date, there's a website that'll help you with that.
Data Doctors radio program.
So we try to find cool apps. We talked about one in the first hour, but we found one that might blow most apps we've ever talked about of all time away.
And it's MacTastic.
It's MacTastic. It's called Air Display.
And I gotta say, after you showed it to me, I was blown away.
It sounds cool talking about it, but it looks ultra cool playing with it. It's a little app that takes your iPad or your iPhone, but really iPad because it's got a decent size, right? And you can use it as an extra display for your Mac or your PC.
Whoa. Shut the front door.
Wait, check this out. All right, so you've got an iPad.
Yes.
Let's imagine you've got your MacBook you're sitting in front of, and you want a little bit more screen real estate. So you can take something and drag it off and onto your iPad without wires and use it on your iPad. But wait, it gets better. Once it's kind of drug over and on your iPad, you can interact with it there. You can touch and click, right? You can zoom. You can do all the things you can do on an iPad. Well, not all the things, because it's an extension of your original display.
So you're sharing the screen with the host computer.
Correct. And that host computer doesn't have to be a Mac. It can be a PC.
No. Wait a second. I thought it was only Mac only.
No, sir. It goes both ways.
It's bi-platformal.
It do.
Wow.
Now, if you're one of those people that happen to have, let's say, an iPhone and an iPad, could you create two extra displays?
I do believe you could.
That's killer, except it would be really hard to see anything on the iPhone.
So you've seen people that have multiple monitors. Same exact idea, only the second monitor in this case is an iPad, and there's no wires.
So, for example, in your office, your desktop PC has three monitors hooked up to it. You could really take your MacBook Pro, hook up an iPad on the left and an iPad on the right, no hookups, just virtually, and just go sweep right across the three of them as it's at one monitor.
I'm so good, I got two iPads and a microphone.
Wow.
Like Beck. That's where it's at. So this might sound a little bit silly. For $10, it's really kind of cool. And if you're into a couple of specific sort of niches, for example, if you're into music production, you use something like Pro Tools or Cubase or one of these kinds of things, you can take this iPad and make it your control surface. And if you're into this, you know what I mean. It's virtual knobs and sliders and faders and that kind of thing that can live on this sort of side device, your iPad, that interact with the main device, a.k.a. your laptop that you're actually got the program running on. So it does all kinds of cool things. You can play videos. You can finally have Flash on your iPad. Well, sort of, right? It's pretty cool. It's about $10 in the App Store. I know it's not free, but it's pretty killer.
And the cool thing is that whenever you use your iPad, because you're on the internet, it knows where you are. Because the internet tracks you. Did you know that?
No. Because the internet tracks you?
The internet tracks you.
We're from the internet, sir, and we know where you are.
Exactly. The internet, there is some new data out that actually shows, and in fact, computer scientist at the University of Science and Technology, Wang Chung, I think is the guy's name.
No, Yang Wang.
Yang Wang. Sorry.
That's a cool name.
Wang Chung was everybody have fun tonight. The internet can actually track you now to within meters.
Yeah, so you've seen before. You go to a site. And it, like Google's a great example. You Google search, and it knows that you're in Phoenix, Arizona.
Approximate location.
And it might even know you're in Glendale or Chandler. It might get kind of specific with where you're at, and it knows the city. Think of that kind of like the zip code. It's targeted you down, but nobody really worries about that. You can go into a web form all day long, and you'll give them your zip code. You don't care who they are because it doesn't identify you in any way. Well, they've come up with a method that's similar to the old school days of like the sub-captains, where they would use the sonar, right? That ping-pong system.
Mm-hmm.
And the faster the sound came back, the closer the object was that they were bouncing the sound off of. Well, same idea, where there's a bunch of fixed, known, exact addresses of computers. And they send little packets out. And the quicker it responds, you're closer to those servers. And so with this kind of advancement, this technology, they've moved from the zip code equivalent of knowing where you are to like the cross street equivalent.
So like internet sonar for packet tracking.
Clayton, isn't this kind of like what Apple's doing though with the iPhone? Is this a similar type of technology that allows them to see where you are?
I think the difference is here though is that, you know, anyone can do this. There's other ways you can do other things you can use to protect yourself, like a proxy server, which would block, you know, anybody's ability to really find out where you're location is.
So at this point, I mean, it's getting harder and harder to be sort of anonymous on the internet. And like most things in tech, there's a good and a bad side to this. The good side is you've all now used your phone or your whatever to help figure out what's close to you that you're looking for. And that technology is awesome. And advancements like this, I can see in a few years where they can really pinpoint you with a lot more accuracy, close to like GPS. But the flip side of that is you start to lose the ability to be anonymous, your privacy, those kinds of things. And so it's interesting this technology continues to advance.
And this technology has advanced to a point where snooping isn't a crime. It's a feature. So the ability to track and locate you has evolved even further. There is an app, and my wife uses this app when she goes shopping. It's called ShopKick. And this is the coolest app. It's kind of invasive.
ShopKick?
ShopKick. Yeah. It's kind of invasive in that it's creepy because it tracks you. It stalks you. So you walk into a Target, a Macy's, a Best Buy, and if you have ShopKick on, the store could, as you're walking through the store, send you coupons in the aisle that you're in.
But how does the phone know the store?
Yeah, here's what's freaky about how it tracks you. It's not using GPS. It's not using Wi-Fi. It's not using location information. It's using the microphone to listen to sounds like dog whistle kind of sounds you can't hear that identify you're in this store.
So something like an ultra high frequency, or are we talking about just, you know, ambient noises or sounds or shopping carts moving around?
And it broadcasts over the store's PA system an inaudible sound that the microphone in your device picks up.
It sounds like this.
Except you don't hear it. And so if you are walking down the diaper aisle and you buy Huggies and they know you're a Huggies buyer, you may walk by Huggies and all of a sudden a Huggies
coupon
shows up.
Now here's the deal. Don't freak about this because you have to purposely go get this app, and you get it knowing it's going to do this because it's going to do something valuable for you in this case.
Save you money,
give you offers, help you find, maybe steer your shopping from brand A to brand B. But cool technology, interesting use of snooping in a good way.
It's killer. Still to come, my MacTastic tip of the week. It is absolutely MacTastic. And I'm going to give you a hint, boys. It has to do with a dictionary.
Whatever. Also, on Google, we have some cool search tips for you. Stick around for all those. This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
Have a tech issue you need help with? Have a question you're dying to have us answer? You can hit us up anytime at facebook.com/datadoctors and post your questions
this
to the wall.
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.
Gentlemen, I was a little premature on that button because you know why.
Because you're so excited to get to your favorite part of the entire
My
show.
My favorite part of the show, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our weekly MacTastic tip.
Oh, you should see his face when he looks at the ceiling as he pronounces it.
This week's MacTastic tip for Mac users from me, Apple fanboy. Hold on.
All right, groovy baby. Now here's how it works, okay?
If you are an Apple user, and you know how you're sometimes on the internet or working on a document and there's a word there that you're just not quite sure what it means. I don't know, like.
Well, I don't know what like means, yeah.
Yeah, you don't know what the word like means.
Of course you wouldn't, because your hatred of everything non-Apple drives everyone away except for the three people that have them. But go ahead.
Absolutely. So, for those of you Mac users, I happen to be on a MacBook Pro 17-inch right now with 6 gig of RAM.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
Does it make you Randy?
If you are hovering over a word in your Safari browser or in your Pages document, and you want to know the definition of the word, just simultaneously press the Command, the Control, and the letter D key for Dictionary.
When you say simultaneously, help define what
simultaneously
means.
At the same time together. So if you do in the sequence of hitting the Command key, holding it down, the Control key and holding it down, and then the letter D and holding it down while you're hovering over a word, it will pop up a dictionary definition right over the word. No need to go searching the net. No need to go looking up the word. And if you want to go crazy, it even has options. You click on options and you can go to Thesaurus. That's not an antique dinosaur that's dead and gone.
Now, can I do this in the reverse order by clicking the D and then the...
No. You can do it in any order. No, you can't.
No, because if you hit the D, it's going to start typing.
Yeah. So, yeah. Command, Control, Control, Command. Either of those can go first.
Hence the simultaneously.
And at the same time and together. But you have to hold them down all together. And that is this week's MacTastic tip. Thank you. I'm done.
You're done for the whole... You're done.
Yeah, I got a smile on my face. I'm
you
good.
You can go home and finish the week off
I'm
going to
kick back now and have my iced tea. It's all yours.
Well, I think we got something else. Anybody here desperate for a date?
Besides you?
Meet our friend Jim. He's searching for his dream girl, but is starting to think it may just be a fantasy.
Well, that's because cloud girlfriends are virtually a click away.
Here's how it works. Cloud girlfriend?
Cloud girlfriends.
I remember the real doll. Is this what we've gone virtual? What are we doing?
Well, it's part of what technology has brought us here today, and now you have the option.
So the idea is, let's kind of dig into this a little bit. The cloud girlfriend.
So does that mean like you get virtual dates?
It's the virtual best version of you, right? So it's a dating site.
Okay.
But not really a it's not like Match. Like let's try to figure out how to hook up. Let's just hook up online. And so purposefully, you're building your profile, if you will, of who you are. And it might be real you or it might be fake you. It might be pictures of you. Do we really need this?
That already exists.
What's that?
It's called World of Warcraft.
So all the nerd dudes are going to this place. Of course, nerd dudes, you've got to pay. The chicks get in for free.
Oh, of course. It's like girls' night at the bar.
Right.
The dudes have to pay double the price.
Basically every night.
I think the source of where we found this, and we'll have a link to it, they have a secret code if you're in the first like 500 people or something, you can get in for free too, just like the chicks. But I don't know, if you're already on World of Warcraft, then you probably don't need this because that's what you do there. And
so can you explain to me, though,
how
this is going to help socially awkward geeks get chicks?
It's basically just going to...
Well, it might help them find socially awkward chicks.
Yeah.
So two social awkward people, one plus one equals zero.
Or is the truism that normal, not socially awkward girls like geeks, if that holds true, then this is going to bring a lot of geek-attracted women to this website.
Essentially Match.com and Second Life, and we have
Second Life, remember
Second
that?
Second Life, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and now we have a cloud girlfriend that, you know,
the name sounds really cool. The cloud girlfriend.
What's your cloud girlfriend? Yeah, but it's so weird because I mean, and they're saying this could be a training tool for the socially for the geeks
socially
or for the
inept.
I don't know. How do you? What is this going to train you to go out on dates? You're not dating your type.
So this
that's not dating.
That's pretend dating.
That's pretend dating. Typing in your keyboard is not going out with a girl, buying her dinner, and heading back to your place for a fantastic evening.
So if you're bad at relationships, you're bad at meeting people, this is going to help you become...
No, it's not going to do a damn thing for you. You know, I heard a... sorry. It's a bad thing, but I heard that the reason that women like geeks now, that why that's cool.
Why?
Because geek used to be a four-letter word. Now it's a six-figure one.
Mm.
Dun-dun-dun.
Amen to that, brother. Huh? That's fantastic. Hey,
cloud
you know, one of the other things we're speaking of getting together and hooking up, Join Me, the makers of Join Me have...
Join.me
is a new service that's come out from the guys that Log Me In.
Yeah.
You've been playing with it a little bit. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we actually use Log Me In quite a bit, and it's a cool little... They have a free and a pro version, but the free version lets you set something up on your computer at home or at work or wherever, and then later get back into it through any web browser anywhere, and they have cool apps for iPhones and iPads and all that to do that too. But they came out with a meeting system. And I know you've seen the go-to meetings in all these of the world, but this lets you do it sort of impromptu, on the fly, up to a couple hundred people, a dial-in number if you want to do the top
couple
thing.
Couple hundred people?
Yeah. And
wow.
You can, because they're experts at sort of this remote computing, you can use it for remote support. You just create a session and then have your helper jump in. It's really kind of cool.
That's cool. So you don't need to plan for it. You can just go, hey, you know what? We got to have this meeting, and boom, 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 you're up and running.
Correct a moon, sir.
That is fantastic. Hey, when we come back, 9 Facebook privacy settings you absolutely have to know about. This is the Data Doctors radio program.
Ever had a health crisis? You went in for what you thought was just a little pain, only to find out you needed a major operation? It can turn your world upside down. The same thing happens day in and day out with computers. We know. We see it in our stores. Look, you have coverage for your family, but what's covering your technology? If you sign up for Data Doctors Quality Care, you're covered. Just like your family health insurance, Quality Care has your computer covered, starting at just $8.95 a month. When your computer needs a checkup, bring it in, and you're a copay away from feeling better again. To become a Data Doctors Quality Care patient, just go to the Data Doctors location nearest you or datadoctors.com and click Quality Care. Data Doctors Quality Care. Health insurance for the health of your PC.
Remember, if you missed any part of the show or just missed the links, we've got them available anytime, datadoctors.com/radio.
Delivering technology for your technology.
The Data Doctors radio program.
So, who in the room isn't on Facebook? Raise your hand.
They can't hear that.
What do you mean?
Okay, well, I'll raise our hands.
Well, you're raising your hand
okay.
Right now.
There's people listening in on our conversation, in case you're not aware.
I just realized that.
Live radio, thank you.
Everyone is on Facebook. Everyone and their mother, my mother. Kenny, how do you do this?
She visits every show.
She is awesome. My mom is one of those people who doesn't get technology, and this is a reason why you need to know these 9 Facebook privacy settings that you just have to know. How many times have you heard about people posting stuff on Facebook or not realizing that stuff that they post is visible to all of these people all over the world? And they go, well, I never agreed to that. I never said my, you know,
yes,
I'm
you did.
And everybody that uses Facebook sounds like that.
Pretty, yeah. Well, the older folks who use Facebook. They call it the Facebook.
The Facebook. Well, that was the original old school name. Yeah. Come on. So
the Spacebook.
So when they finally figure out that all this stuff can be seen by friends and friends of friends and maybe friends mm-hmm. of friends of friends, right? Then they go, oh, well, no problem. I'll just delete all the weird stuff.
Right. The problem is that you continue to post stuff because you don't know about your privacy settings. So one of the options, and we have a full list at datadoctors.com/radio of the 9 Facebook privacy settings, but number 9 is public search. It's in your settings. Public search, whether it controls whether or not people who enter your name in a search engine can find your Facebook page. So if someone Googles you and you have public search on, enabled, they're going to find you.
That might not be a bad thing, though. Maybe you want to be found by your friends and, you know, kind of high school reunion online kind of thing.
But let's say you're in the witness protection program.
Dictionary.
Let's say you're in the witness protection program and you don't want to be found. Because, well, you know, you turned in someone from the mafia.
You probably shouldn't be on the radio show, though. That's step one.
All right, I got to go.
Oh, you don't mean you.
Oh, no.
Oh, you mean somebody else. Okay.
Not me. The other thing that really seems to drive people nuts, and Brandon, I know you don't see the ads on Facebook. They're
what
invisible
ads?
To you.
Yeah, exactly. What ads? They're dead right. to me.
Is that your data actually aggregates and helps Facebook push ads your way. And so the way you can do that is there's a little tab called Facebook Ads, and you can turn Facebook ads off. So in the future, you can show your information to no one mm-hmm. or to selected third-party plugins.
What if I just want to show it to advertisers?
And what if I want more ads?
Yeah.
How do I ask for that?
Is there a add-on feature for ads?
Can I have ads everywhere?
Well, if you did that, would Facebook be freer?
More freer?
Freer.
Maybe, how does it get freer than free?
Maybe they could pay you to use it.
They could. They
what,
could.
What else we got?
So there's a ton of stuff on there. What apps can access you, what your friends can share about you. This is a huge one, and I am a huge fan. I have certain things locked down on this. So, for example, if I go to a public place, have you ever used Places yet on Facebook?
Oh,
yeah. Don't like it, okay. But I've used it.
It's like the Foursquare-ish light.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I don't like about it is that if you don't check the friends can't check you inbox, they can check you in like you're there with them, but you may not want to be there with them. You may be having a business meeting somewhere or, you know, doing something that's not related to this person, and they check in with you, but they're having a party and drinking, and all of a sudden your boss sees it, and you get busted for doing something you didn't do because someone checked you in.
Remember our girlfriend story? What if you're out with girlfriend one and girlfriend two sees that girlfriend one checked you in?
Correct.
Yeah. Busted.
So you can turn those settings off. Again, we have a full link to all of those, datadoctors.com/radio.
So there's something else, and it's switching gears completely, and it's not a big deal, but it's a big deal. HDMI cables.
What about them?
This is my rant here. This is my soapbox. This is my go nuts. They're all the same.
Oh, no,
no
they're not.
No, quit. No, the world's coming
to
an end.
I went to buy a TV recently, and the sales guy is mm-hmm. trying to sell me an oxygen-free, diamond-coated,
right.
tiger blood-infused magic cable you plug in that's going to give you so much better picture. Are you out of your mind, dude?
It's better.
It's the only way
it's
to win.
It's not better.
It costs same. 3 times as much. It's better.
It's rip-offable.
It's
is that a word?
You're telling me the $50 cable is not...
No.
It's
the $4 cable. Get the cheap one. Get the length you need. Get the cheap one.
You know the difference between a 3-footer and a 6-footer?
3 feet?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I wish they would do with HDMI cables? I know it's tangenting a little here, but why don't they have a clip that locks them in?
So they don't snap off?
Yeah, no, so that they don't come unplugged. I've got a DVD player, and the cable, you know, plugs in, and then there's like this long couple-inch hard plastic thing, and then the cable finally bends, and where it's at in my entertainment center, that cable has to make a quick turn, and if you touch the DVD player, like when you're ejecting, and mm-hmm. it comes just a little bit unlodged, and I got to go back there and fiddle around with it.
Well, maybe
why
you should
don't
buy
have a
the
clip?
HDMI cable that has that 90-degree... turn on
they have
internet.
That
yeah
well,
they
that's
do have
$100 extra
but you know Brandon I actually resolved that issue and I'm going to tell you this is a great
you bought
those,
an oxygen free
I bought an
oxygen
free 6-footer no here here's what I
so
did because
better.
I was having that same issue with my DVD player and the HDMI cable. What I did is I took a piece of scotch tape, actually it was masking tape, on the top and bottom. Mm-hmm. I basically folded an L, so part of it's on the box, part of it's on the cable, top and bottom, and it keeps the cable from coming out.
I was sure you were going to tell me you went to the Apple store and bought an Apple HDMI cable, and that solved all your problems
because
they never break.
Because they're better.
Right. That's where I knew you were going, and you didn't. So
I didn't.
I'm happy about
sucka!
That.
Sucker!
Right.
We had one other thing. and this is back to the PlayStation story because it's been a big deal. We found what is probably the most beneficial part of the story.
Hold on a second. PlayStation users, if you need something to do while the PlayStation Network is down, this just in. Let's go to the PlayStation News Desk. Clayton?
Okay. Number 10 on the list of...
I'm proud of you for working backwards. Yeah. Thank you. Number 10. Go ahead.
Number 10. How about this? Take a shower.
Really?
Yeah.
When you're doing serious gaming, you don't want to shower.
Probably haven't been showering too much.
Stinky
anyway.
Guy, shower up. What's number 9?
Stench bod.
Number 9. Change your password from password. Or change your password from 123456.
But you can't change it. The network's down. Number 8.
Okay, so let's say visit your mom.
Visit your mom. There was a couple of them that were really good. Watch replays of the royal wedding. Yeah.
Can he come to Tucson?
And, of course, don't watch them on your PlayStation.
And finally, number 1, read War and Peace.
That's what I would do with every free minute of my life. Hey, remember, all the links to everything we talk about on today's program can be found at datadoctors.com/radio. Plus, we've got a search tool up there. It's a great resource if you're looking for answers to computer questions, technology issues. You can just hit it up, type in your question. If you're thinking about it, somebody's probably already asked it.
Until next week, it's the Data Doctors, Ken, Brandon, and Clayton, reminding you, get a good clean bill of health.
What?
This is the Data Doctors Radio Program.